It's 8 o'clock. This is KBNF Regional News for Friday, February 26th. I'm Patricia Naft. After 7 hours of complete closure, the Colorado Department of Transportation reopened I-70. The highway was completely closed in both directions while crews repaired the roads and prepared the lanes for the new traffic pattern. For the past several days, a pilot car was leading alternating groups of traffic through one lane. Even though two lanes are now open, CDOT will have pace cars to make sure traffic stays slow enough. This is Tracy Truelove, CDOT spokesperson.
The damage to the eastbound lanes, but the width in there is different than people are used to. We also have it striped double yellow for no crossing, and it's about safety, just keeping people in control and maintaining safe speeds. Folks will still come to a stop point before a pace car picks them up, but with us opening it 24/7 in this configuration, we're hoping that that helps with the volumes that we're seeing going through there.
Previously, delays with the alternating traffic pattern were reaching 2 to 3 hours during peak time, but Truelove says they hope to cut that down to just 1 hour. Closures still might occur in the future as road crews continue to repair the roadway. The U.S. Forest Service is beginning the process of evaluating changes to a coal mining lease in the North Fork area. KBNF's Jake Ryan has more.
The U.S. Forest Service is beginning the process of evaluating changes to a coal mining lease in the North Fork area. The West Elk Mine requested, several years ago, 2 changes to their coal mining lease, expanding the amount that they can mine. It was approved, but a recent lawsuit from environmental groups overturned that decision. It was all about the environmental impact statement. Ann Janik is a public information officer with the Forest Service based out of Delta. She says that the court found the EIS lacking in factoring in the social economic effects.
Air quality, climate change, the social cost of methane, the social cost of carbon, and there's also some additional sensitive species that we'll be looking at analyzing the effects of.
They're now working on a supplemental EIS to address those concerns. With the same judgment, the court found that the roadless rule exemption, which would allow traditional mining in the area to even exist, to be similarly lacking. The Forest Service and the BLM are currently going through the process to produce a supplemental EIS for that.
It all hinges on this exemption being reinstated. So the Forest Service and the BLM are going through an environmental analysis to look at this exemption. The judge also wanted that to be reviewed again and updated. So within 30 days or so, there will be a decision on whether that exemption will be reinstated.
The lease expansion, should it get reapproved, and the exemption reapproved, could extend employment in the mine by around 2 years. The official public comment period will begin on the lease expansion in the spring when the first draft of the new EIS is released. Janik does say, though, that they are always taking public comment. For KVNF, I'm Jake Ryan.
A felony arrest was made in Gateway on Sunday. Mesa County Sheriff's Deputy Henry Stoffel says that Claude Wilkerson was arrested on several counts.
First-degree kidnapping, sexual assault, which is a felony, contributing to delinquency of a minor, false imprisonment, and harboring a minor.
Wilkerson spent 4 years in Texas on death row before the charges against him were dismissed by a federal appeals court. He's being held in Mesa County on a $1 million bond. State lawmakers are once again debating whether to allow Colorado residents to use rain barrels to collect the rain that falls from their roofs. As Benta Berkland reports, the bill cleared its first committee at the state capitol Monday.
Colorado is the only state where it's illegal to capture rainwater for use at a later time. Democratic Representative Jesse Danielson of Wheat Ridge is one of the main sponsors of House Bill 1005. It would allow people to collect up to 110 gallons each year.
This is a really straightforward bill. You could use that water when you see fit for your tomato plants and your flower gardens.
Supporters say another goal is to educate people about water and how to conserve it. Drew Beckwith is with the environmental group Western Resource Advocates.
Someone with a rain barrel begins to pay attention to how often it rains. They begin to understand how much water it takes to water their grass. It makes visible what is invisible for a lot of people.
Water experts, including James Eklund, say that educational component is key. Eklund heads the Colorado Water Conservation Board and spearheaded Colorado's first ever statewide water plan. He says not having rain barrels hurts the state's brand.
For Colorado to lead the nation in innovative water management, technology, and policy, we need to have a better story to tell than the one we have right now. The bottom line is we've got to move on beyond this subject.
Last year, a similar bipartisan measure failed on the final day of the legislative session. Over the summer, an interim committee of lawmakers studied the issue, and water experts from Colorado State University modeled the potential impact to downstream users. They found that there would be no impact from rain barrels, but Jim Yon says not so fast.
And the reason that this model doesn't show that is because it wasn't intended to show it.
Yon is an engineer and manages the Sterling and Pruitt reservoirs in the northeastern part of the state. He believes the model isn't accurate when it says that rain would otherwise be absorbed in a person's yard. He thinks rain barrels prevent some water from flowing out of the yard and to other water users.
So downstream of Denver, there's 200 miles of river. We're not anti-rain barrel, we're anti the misuse of the prior appropriation system.
Republican Representative John Becker of Fort Morgan says there's a reason a lot of members from the agriculture community aren't behind it.
Water in my area is not taken lightly. This is serious to the point where we argue all the time amongst ourselves on how this works and if there's going to be damage and how we get that taken care of. This is not something I want to be against.
But at this point, Becker says he does have to vote no, especially after his amendment didn't make it on the bill. It would have given recourse to people potentially harmed by rain barrels. The measure passed the committee on a 10-2 vote. It now heads to the full House floor for further debate. Last year, it passed the House but failed in the Senate. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
For KBNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.